This CosmicReality.com presentation is sponsored by MysticalWares.com. Is there something wrong?
Warning, life support failure on all decks. Abandon ship.
Maybe it is time to take command.
Bridge to Captain.
Join Jan Shaw, updating current events as only Jan can.
Library computer. Data being received.
Produced by CosmicReality.com.
Hello and welcome to Saturday's edition of the Cosmic Creating Show. My name is Jan Shaw. I'm the Success Alchemist. You can find me at thesuccessalchemist.net, thewebalchemist.net, empoweredmanifestation.com, and Facebook and YouTube, Jan Shaw, the Success Alchemist, and on Twitter at Coach Jan Shaw. Today is the 16th of April, 2022, and the title of today's show is Don't Watch the Water, and it's Dr. Ardis' interview, part two. So, on Wednesday, I covered the Stu Peters Watch the Water interview, or documentary as he's called it, with Dr. Brian Ardis. And this has gone viral across the internet. As I said on Wednesday, this interview, or documentary as he calls it, was pretty good, but I actually found that Mike Adams, the health ranger, had actually done a three-part interview with Dr. Ardis, which was far superior to this much shorter one with Stu Peters, and primarily because Mike Adams has a scientific background and he was asking some really pertinent questions and also summarizing things in a way that kind of joined the dots, if you like, and clarified some of the things in detail that Dr. Ardis was presenting. So I believe that Stu Peters is a sensationalist, not that impressed with him. Yes, okay, it's good that he started to get this out into the world, but I think there are far better interviewers, and in fact, Patriot Street Fighter has also done a long interview with Dr. Ardis, which I've just started watching. I haven't had time to go through that, primarily because I've been watching part two of the Mike Adams interview, which I promised I would cover today. And it does take a long time to actually watch this and take notes. So that's why I haven't got to part three yet. That's next in line, probably for Wednesday's show. But I also watched an update that Mike Adams did yesterday, and he had some very interesting things to say. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go through that. I'm also going to go through some of the rebuttals that have come out. And then I'm going to go into the detail of what Dr. Ardis presents in the second part of this three-part interview series with Mike Adams. So, and you can find this on Brightian. I can't share it anywhere because Facebook, I'm not sure about the other social media platforms, but they have banned any links to Brighteon.com. So nice of them to censor everything. But go to Brighteon.com, just do a search for Health Ranger, and you'll find the interviews and his various updates. And in the past, I've been very skeptical about Mike Adams because he can be rather sensationalist as well, and put out what I consider to be fear porn. But these interviews that he's done with Dr. Ardis are, in my opinion, excellent. So let me just go into what he said on his situation update yesterday. He actually said that Dr. Ardis never focused on the water, and that was something that Stu Peters did, assigning the title Watch the Water. This is why I have the opinion that Stu Peters is a sensationalist, is a clickbaiter. Incidentally, I just need to say that I've been having a few problems with my microphone, so if the sound is altered, that's why. And also, I have a lot of pages of notes to go through, plenty to cover, and I'll probably be rustling papers, so apologies for that. Hope you'll bear with me. So continuing what Mike Adams said, and bear in mind also that Mike Adams, in the first part of the interview, did say that Dr. Ardis came to him first, so I think we can trust what he is saying. Dr. Ardis in the last few days has been saying, stop focusing on the water. It's not about the water. It's about snake venom peptides, and maybe they're used in the payload in gain-of-function research for the virus, or maybe they're used in treatments that are given to people in hospital. Or maybe they're in the mRNA instructions of the so-called vaccines. Maybe your body is making snake venom peptides. That's the theory. It's not even about the water. And yet some of the reactions are pretty crazy out there. There's something going on like Operation Venom Smokeout, to smoke out some not so good people in the alternative media who don't play well with others. Not nice people who don't treat people with respect or give them the benefit of the doubt. Dr. Ardis is being attacked and accused of working for the deep state. The people who are not good for this movement are outing themselves. Do your own research. Mike Adams said he was blown away by what he discovered about venoms in pharmaceuticals. Some alternative news channels are covering up the story and refusing to touch it, just like the mainstream media did with Hunter's laptop. Mike Adams' theory is even wilder than Dr. Ardis's is. What if people were being poisoned with that magical cone snail venom? The Latin name Conus magus. It becomes the drug Prialt. That drug's side effects are neuropsychiatric adverse reactions, severe psychiatric symptoms, and neurological impairment. Do not treat patients with a pre-existing condition of psychosis, cognitive and neuropsychotic adverse reactions, cognitive impairment, and severe neuropsychotic symptoms may occur. What if half the country was exposed to Conus magus? Wouldn't that be the ultimate toxin to saturate the country with people who are having hallucinations and confusion? And he laughed. Satire. If you're exposed to cone snail venoms, you get hallucinations. As I said earlier, I hadn't been a fan of Mike Adams in the past. But having just listened to his situation update that I'm reporting on, his humour is brilliant. I suggest you listen for some interesting facts, satire and a good laugh. Drug companies are synthesising proteins from venom, not capturing multiple live snakes. There are 13 irrefutable facts about venom that he shares in this update. I'm only covering a couple of these that I felt were particularly pertinent. Irrefutable fact number 4, reptile venom can be weaponized and made into biological weapons. The protein sequences provided by the venom library companies, VenomTech and ToxinTech, can allow a drug company to engage in gain-of-function research to engineer venom peptides into a viral payload or into mRNA therapeutics, which involves protein synthesis in your own body. The science can be weaponized by someone who has malintent. Mike Adams says he plans to send an official journalistic inquiry to these venom library companies, asking, are there any limits to who you will license this technology to? And are you aware that this technology can potentially be weaponized by bad actors? They could be using your libraries to build weapons of mass destruction that could theoretically kill billions of people. So how do you manage that as a company that licenses this intellectual property? How do you do due diligence on who is buying this? Or do you just trust Big Pharma? Big Pharma has killed more people than the Holocaust. They're the biggest mass murderers. So if you're just going to trust Big Pharma, that's not good. How do you make sure your proteins and peptides are not being used to kill people? Then number 9, the venoms which are synthesized are chemically stable. There's a reference to toxintech.com. They don't dissociate in water. They are chemically stable to be delivered orally, which means they survive saliva and stomach acid. So city water isn't going to rip these apart. So some scientifically illiterate people are saying the venom would fall apart in city water. Not true. Their stability is celebrated by these peptide companies, and they don't need any preservatives. Venoms are large molecules, so they can't be absorbed through the skin and must be injected. That's why the deep state depopulation agenda can't aerosolize venom and spray it on the populace. They have to persuade people to have the injection vaccine. He says it is plausible that this could be released into a public water supply, referring to the venom. In a one-time event or one certain city, it could be put into the food supply, into bottled water, if that was the agenda to poison people for depopulation. Mike Adams believes what Dr. Ardis has revealed about envenomation is plausible and should be taken seriously. So a friend shared with me one of these rebuttals that Mike Adams was talking about on his situation update, basically saying that they're really going all out to attack Dr. Ardis. And a friend sent this one to me from Amanda D. Vollmer, who I'd never heard of, but apparently she is the author of a book, Healing with DMSO. She struck me as being very smug, self-satisfied, and full of herself. Her argument is COVID is just seasonal detoxification. COVID-19 doesn't exist. The pandemic is just testing trends. Nothing new in the numbers. Germ theory is false. You're deficient in nutrients, magnesium, vitamin C and D, which help with detox. As soon as they say COVID is real, they are pushing fakery. But I say they aren't. They're saying it's not a virus, it's snake venom. She claims there is no proper evidence of it. Snake venom has been used in drug discovery for thousands of years and used in medicine for hundreds of years, she claims. It's nothing new, and he, Dr. Ardis, is presenting it as if it's a great revelation. I don't think so. He's presenting it as being used as a bioweapon. She refers to The Invisible Rainbow, A History of Electricity and Life by Arthur Fistenberg, and relates that to the fact that he doesn't mention the impact of 5G, which can cause respiratory issues. Well, fine, but this is not his topic. His topic is going through all the information about the use of snake venom to basically back up his claim. So he's not going to divert into all different subjects that have no bearing on what he's informing us about. She claims Dr. Ardis is selling water, that his agenda is about money. I've looked up his business, which is True Labs, which sells supplements but not water. She says it's targeted at truthers to make us lose our way. She's accusing us of being stupid and gullible. She says the Stu Peters interview is behind a paywall. That's not true either. And I did write, this woman is unhinged. I mean, the way that she was ranting about this was quite extraordinary. She claims that snake venom has been used in medicine for hundreds of years, but what she fails to recognize is that drugs can be used for good or evil, just like nuclear power. And this is what Mike Adams was saying. Think about the biolabs in Ukraine. The Department of Defense has claimed that these labs were doing research for defensive purposes, but the same drugs and biologics can be used offensively. So likewise, isn't it possible that snake venom is used offensively, given that we are in a spiritual battle against evil, Satanism and Luciferianism? So then I went to see what Alex Jones' channel was saying about this. And there was a show by Kate Daly. I'd not heard of her before, but she was very good. She considers the theories about the snake venom hold water, and she doesn't put it past the deep state to do this, as evil is their modus operandi. Let's face it, this is my comment. The Great Reset objective is depopulation, so to think that they won't use any means possible is naive. And remember, satanic people use satanic methods. Look at the Vatican Assembly Hall. It looks like the head of a snake. Now, before I get into the part two, I also started to look at the Patriot Street Fighter interview with Dr. Ardis, which was on the 11th of April. And this is a key point at the beginning of the interview. Dr. Ardis is now on a hit list, according to Dr. Zev Zelenko, who is also on the hit list. Bear in mind, if this weren't true, they wouldn't be out to get him. That's my comment. Dr. Zelenko interviewed Dr. Ardis on the 7th of April and told him that high-level intel says Big Pharma, specifically the Pfizer group, has an assassination list. And he said he doesn't know whether to be jealous or to congratulate Dr. Ardis because he's number one on that list. His research has been a God-driven thing, Dr. Ardis said. Now, another commentator on this is Steve Kirsch. I get his newsletter from Substack. He's put an article out, What I Think of the Brian Ardis Video, Watch the Water. He says, a few parts I agree with, for most other parts I'm sceptical. Brian met with us, so we had an opportunity to ask questions. Some think it is worthless, some don't. And he does a summary. On April 14th, 2022, a group of my colleagues met with Dr. Ardis and Dr. Tao Braun to discuss their discoveries. It was interesting in that opinions of the group varied widely from this is totally worthless to I think we have to take this seriously. We do agree that the virus sequences are similar to snake venom, but it's not long enough to make a call on this. But as for the other assertions, such as it's a poison spread through the water, nobody thinks that is the case. I'm going to have some water checked just in case. And he includes the Stu Peters Watch the Water and also the Mike Adams interview that I've been sharing. So just to summarise his take, do I think it's poison rather than a virus? No. He also questions about poisons replicating over time. Or they don't replicate over time. But what Dr. Ardis is saying is that it's mRNA from the venom, which is causing the body to manufacture snake venom proteins, just like the spike protein. The second thing, do I think the virus is spread throughout the water? Very unlikely. It would take massive coordination. Do I think the virus is related to snake venom? Dr. Tao Braun was discussing the similarities to snake venom in late 2020, but the experts I talked to on this weren't impressed. Is Ardis on a hit list? I think so, because I've personally verified this. I heard that assertion directly from a top government official. Do any of us think the drinking water is being deliberately poisoned by people? No. Could something be getting in the drinking water? We highly doubt it, but this is easy enough to test. Is it spread through the air almost exclusively? That's an interesting question. That's the current thinking. I also know that there were several people who got sick at the DTM event who all worked in the same room together. Are toxin-like peptides found in plasma, urine, and fecal samples from COVID-19 patients apparently true? What is the significance to be determined? As the paper points out, this raises more questions than it answers. So that's his assessment, which is fine. I just want to say, and my final point on this before I go into the detail, is I'm not saying I'm wholly convinced about this, as all of this is circumstantial evidence, but it does tie together. What we need is an analysis of the vaccine to identify if it includes snake venom proteins and peptides. I wonder if Mike Adams' labs could do that. So here we go into part two of the Mike Adams interview. Certain therapies and treatments for snake venom perfectly take care of the death and carnage caused by SARS-CoV-2 infections and all their variants. Picture every COVID-19 infected patient as if they've been bitten by a snake. Then address the envenomation. Test every COVID-19 patient with an ELISA IG test. It tests for snake bite. The hypodermic needle was made from the design of a fang. An injection is the simulation of a snake bite. February 2015, a study shows extensive lung tissue damage in envenomated mice. Edematous swelling of lung tissue with subsequent accumulation of pulmonary infiltrate blocks the alveolar airspaces, disrupting gas exchange and lung mechanics, leading eventually to respiratory failure. They are pushing respiratory failure as a result of COVID-19, and it's also caused by remdesivir. Exposure to cobra venom encourages serious histopathological, in other words, tissue alterations on renal and pulmonary tissue, and moderately on intestinal tissue of venom mice. Cobra toxin is cardiotoxic. Cardiotoxin is a peptide toxin produced by the Chinese cobra. It is cytotoxic. In other words, it kills cells. And cardiotoxic, obviously, is toxic to the heart. February 2022, cardiotoxin binds to the cell membranes and depolarizes cardiomyocytes, which are heart cells. It also shows lytic activities, which means destruction, on many other cells, including red blood cells. It also targets the mitochondrial membrane and induces mitochondrial swelling and fragmentation. It binds to the integrin alpha V beta 3 with a moderate affinity and inhibits protein kinases. Not sure what that means exactly. It targets mitochondrial membranes, and the mitochondria are what generate the energy, I believe. Goes into the cells, not just poisoning them from the outside. This is what Mike Adams said. Potential cardiotoxic effects of remdesivir on cardiovascular system. This was October 2021. Remdesivir can also induce significant cytotoxic effects in cardiomyocytes that is considerably worse than chloroquine cytotoxic effects. Remdesivir-induced cardiotoxicity is due to its binding to human mitochondrial RNA polymerase, exactly the same effects as king cobra venom. Nature Genetics, the Indian cobra reference genome. This is an article from the 6th of January 2020. Currently, snake antivenom is the only treatment effective in the prevention or reversal of the effects of envenomation. Since 1896, antivenom has been developed by immunisation of large mammals, such as the horse, with snake venom to generate a cocktail of antibodies that are used for therapy. Costa Rica health virus plasma horses. This is a Getty image. A scientist manipulates a velvet snake to extract venom at the Clodomiro Picado Institute in San Jose, Costa Rica, September 24, 2020. The Clodomiro Picado Institute obtained coronavirus proteins from laboratories in China and the UK to immunize 6 donated horses for treatment, and which plasma was used to produce a viral treatment to be used in 26 patients infected with the new COVID-19. To develop the drug, the institute based on its half-century experience in the production of antivenom, which it currently exports to other Central American countries, Ecuador, Colombia, Peru, and several African nations. And Mike Adams comments, the same method they used to create antivenom. It's like they accidentally told the truth with this image of the snake. Dr. Ardis says this company for half a century have been specialising in making anti-venom. Insane. January 2021, snake venom phospholipases, A2, possess a strong viricidal activity against SARS-CoV-2 in vitro and block the cell fusion mediated by spike glycoprotein interaction with the ACE2 receptor. 9th of January 2021, venom from one of Brazil's largest snakes could reduce COVID's ability to multiply. During COVID-19 in 2020 and 2021, there was another global crisis. Snake bites and COVID-19, two crises, one research and development opportunity. Despite inherent differences, snake and venoming and COVID-19 have much in common in terms of R&D challenges and opportunities. Both crises require a diversified portfolio of R&D solutions, ranging from diagnostics to treatments that can effectively work and be accessible in different resource settings. Same issue, it says, and I think this was the British Medical Journal that published that. Business Wire, 3rd of March 2021, $1.58 billion anti-venom market, global growth trends, COVID-19 impact and forecasts, 2021 to 2026, researchandmarkets.com. In terms of the BMJ PDF, the British Medical Journal, odd that there's a booming business in anti-venom and at the same time there's a boom in snake bites during lockdown. Why connect the two anyway? It's all related. A 40% increase in snake bites in Texas 2020 versus 2019. February 2021, snake venom derived bradykinin peptides, a promising therapy for COVID-19. Then Mike Adams comments, how can snake venom derived molecules treat COVID-19 if COVID is based on snake venom? So he's saying that that suggests that COVID is based on snake venom. Dr. Ardis goes on, there are vipers that have different components that act on different systems. The blood clotting effect of one venom can be countered by another venom that is anticoagulant. This is why the crate and the cobra venom are tied together as SARS-CoV-2, because they have an increased prothrombin time. Crates do the opposite, they create blood clotting. So basically, the cobra venom is anticoagulant and the crate venom actually create the blood clotting. Mike Adams says this explains why the more vaccine injections they get, the more immune functions are destroyed. Dr. Ardis goes on, there is a lot of evidence that snake venom destroys the immune system, including T cells, CD8, CD4 cells. That's what's being reported around the world with one shot after another. Mike Adams replies, they're pushing a fourth shot in the US, UK and Israel, but the antibodies are gone in 4 weeks or so. February 2021, the NIH says, or writes, snake venom-derived bradykinin potentiating peptides, a promising therapy for COVID-19, which is a snake venom enzyme. September 2021, snake venom can stop COVID-19 from multiplying. Researchers in Brazil have discovered that a particle in the venom of a Juracusa pit viper's venom has the ability to stop the reproduction of coronavirus. Quote, we were able to show this component of snake venom was able to inhibit a very important protein from the virus. Wall Street Call, anti-venom market future growth. Outlook, Merck, Micropharm, Pfizer, December 2021. Pfizer is hugely in the anti-venom market, and Merck has been in it for years. High blood pressure drug made by Merck is made from snake venom. November 2021, Pfizer files EUA, Emergency Use Authorization, application for COVID-19 drug Paxlovid. The drug inhibits cysteine protease from the PA clan proteases that play a coagulant role as they are involved in blood clotting cascade. As a cysteine protease inhibitor, it may disrupt coagulation and have blood thinning qualities leading to predisposition to internal bleedings. Several snake venoms also belong to PA clan proteases and interfere with blood clotting cascade, This is interesting in the light of the presence of neurotoxin-like motifs noted earlier in the SARS-CoV-2 sequence related to snake venom neurotoxin superantigens. June 2021, venom-derived neurotoxins targeting nicotinic acetylcholine receptors. Hospitals around the world during the COVID-19 surge were reporting that the least demographic that was suffering from SARS-CoV-2 were smokers. Less than 5% around the world were being hospitalized for COVID-19. They were reporting this up until May. Our NIH, CDC and FDA went into action in May 2020. Everyone needs to know the highest, most likely demographic group being hospitalized for COVID-19 were smokers. They lied to everybody. Now, there's never been a better time to quit smoking. That's what they said. If you use nicotine, it blocks the nicotine acetylcholine receptors and stops the neurotoxins from venom attaching to them. You could block SARS-CoV-2 completely by using nicotine. The neurotoxins attack the nicotine acetylcholine receptors, which control your diaphragm and affect your ability to breathe. Dr. Ardis says by taking nicotine gum when you have COVID-19, the Omicron variant, you will recover quickly. Now, my question was, if nicotine prevents the neurotoxins from attaching to these receptors, surely the attached neurotoxins would prevent the nicotine from attaching when you're actually suffering symptoms. Now, I think he does answer this, but I'm not really familiar with the technicalities. He says it is venom poisoning, not a respiratory virus or lung infection. It gets into your brainstem and crosses the blood-brain barrier, which is what this venom is designed to do. It paralyzes your diaphragm's ability to breathe. Your oxygen levels drop. Venom, and this is where I think he's explaining what my question was, venom is secondary to bind to them. So I think it means that the venom is pushed out by the nicotine, which then attaches, preventing further attacks. For any future variant, you need to use nicotine, nicotine gum or patches. Nicotine and zinc receptors are targeted by snake venom. This is why they're punishing doctors for recommending zinc. He told Dr. Zev Zelenko to keep pushing hydroxychloroquine and zinc. Zinc will block the negative impacts of snake venoms. Every person treating COVID-19 needs to focus on 1. Nicotine supplementation, 2. Zinc, 3. Hydroxychloroquine or ivermectin, which are zinc ionophores, and an ionophore is a substance which is able to transport particular ions across a lipid membrane in a cell. An ion is a charged atom or molecule. Charge means the number of electrons do not equal the number of protons. I had to look that up. Dr. Ardis prefers HCQ, hydroxychloroquine, because it is the one drug that can't be co-administered with remdesivir. They don't mention ivermectin. They say hydroxychloroquine is an antagonist to the antiviral properties of remdesivir. Hydroxychloroquine is used as an antimalarial drug, which is antiparasitic and known to block snake venom poisoning. NAC to block blood clotting mechanism. Crate venom is blood clotting. King cobra is blood thinning. The side effect of remdesivir is extended prothrombin time, which is the time it takes for the blood to clot. It is a blood clotting inhibitor. King cobra venom has the same side effect. Concerns with mRNA vaccines. November 2009. mRNA is most likely snake venom mRNA and not viral. Dr. Malone didn't invent the mRNA vaccines. They are actually credited to 2 co-inventors, Drew Weissman and Katalin Karikó at the University of Pennsylvania. They invented the COVID-19 mRNA vaccine. The study is back in 2009 and it says
increase in biological stability of the mRNAs. Quote, indeed, higher resistance to hydrolysis by phosphodiesterases from snake venom and spleen has been reported when uridine was replaced with, and this is a blank, it doesn't say, it's probably redacted, in dinucleotide substrates. They've been using snake venom properties to create mRNA vaccines as far back as 2009. And Mike Adams comments, increasing the stability of mRNA to maintain its structure while it's penetrating the cells. This work was supported, and this is from the article, this work was supported by the NIH and NIAID, Fauci and Collins. So the two inventors, Catalin Carrico and Drew Weissman, have formed a small biotech company that receives funding from the NIH to explore the use of nucleotide-modified mRNA for gene therapy. The powers that be have repeatedly denied that the mRNA vaccines are gene therapy. 2012 from PubMed.gov, unusual stability of messenger RNA in snake venom reveals gene expression dynamics of venom replenishment. Quote, here we exploit the unusual stability of mRNA in venom to conduct for the first time quantitative PCR to characterize the dynamics of gene expression of newly synthesized venom proteins following venom depletion, i.e. make something by synthesis, especially chemically, that is a definition of synthesized. Carrying on with a quote, the stability of mRNA in venom is biologically fascinating and could significantly empower venom research by expanding opportunities to produce transcriptomes from historical venom stocks and rare or endangered venomous species for new therapeutic, diagnostic and evolutionary studies. A sample of snake venom from 1984, looked at in 2012, the mRNA is still stable after 30 years. They are shocked that the venom properties of the snake don't destroy the mRNA over time. So Mike Adams says, we're told that the mRNA is stabilized by being capped with polyethylene glycol. Is that a cover story? It looks like the snake venom is the preservative for the instructions, and if the instructions themselves are how to make snake venom. In 2014, they found they could make it more stable by wrapping it in a nanoparticle hydrogel. Then they combined it with dynabeads in 2015. It explains the mRNA shots. mRNA extractions from venom. Polyadenylated mRNA was purified from lyophilized, that's freeze-dried, venom using dynabeads mRNA direct kit using the manufacturer's protocol. So there's a kit to get this mRNA from snake venom. Real-time PCR is how they magnify the gene sequences of snake venom using PCR. What are we using to identify a virus that has never been used before? PCR testing. These results demonstrate that potentially large quantities of mRNA of high quality can be reproducibly recovered from snake venom. More than adequate amounts of mRNA were recovered from each venom sample for downstream PCR analysis. In other words, mRNA from snake venom is stable for many years and is not affected by the diverse array of destructive nucleases that attack RNA and phosphodiesterases and naturally acidic conditions. Mike Adams says a lot of these vaccines are lyophilized, freeze-dried powders that have to be diluted with solution, just like this snake venom. So they're shipping out venom, calling it a vaccine, and lining people up to inject them. Dr. Ardis goes on, that's how remdesivir comes, in a little glass jar of lyophilized powder, just like snake venom does. Mike Adams, and that stuff is going to last 30 years. August 2011, snake venom phosphodiesterase. You can buy it online. It is inhibited by reducing agents such as glutathione, cysteine and ascorbic acids, and completely inhibited by MEDTA. Glutathione is being removed by the FDA. NIC produces glutathione and it's banned from many websites, including Amazon. Glutathione injections have had great results with COVID. Ascorbic acid is vitamin C. Cobra venom was literally chopped in half the morbidity and mortality with vitamin C concentrations in plasma. I think that meant that the morbidity and mortality were chopped in half. There was a direct correlation between survivability of SARS-CoV-2 and vitamin C loads in venom peptides. Mike Adams says the study shows a very low concentration of vitamin C. He'd heard of people taking EDTA and it deactivates snake venom. And it says on WebMD, EDTA is used to treat lead poisoning, brain damage caused by lead poisoning, poisoning by radioactive materials, for heart and blood vessel conditions, hardening of the arteries, angina, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, stroke and blood circulation problems, which we're seeing in people who've had the vaccine. Also, treatment of cancer, rheumatoid arthritis, osteoarthritis, macular degeneration, diabetes, Alzheimer's, multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's and skin conditions, including scleroderma and psoriasis. This study is also done by Catalin Carrico and Drew Weissman, a small biolab that receives money from the NIH to explore the use of nucleoside-modified mRNA for gene therapy. Dr. Ardis continues, I'm about to show you how in your face this is. Pediatrician Dr. Peter Hotez, January 2022, creates a new vaccine. Quote, from obscurity to a Nobel Prize nomination, Houston scientists acclaimed for their patent-free COVID-19 vaccine. This is from the Texas Tribune. February 2022, could a patent-free vaccine offer a COVID solution that stands up against Alpha, Delta to Omicron and all future variants? Microbiologist Maria Botazzi, her colleague Peter Hotez, and their team at the Texas Children's Hospital Center for Vaccine Development last month unveiled CorbiVax, the world's COVID-19 vaccine, and doctors say it could be a game changer. The producer and owner of the vaccine is Biological E in India. CorbiVax is their vaccine. Is CorbiVax a play on words for CobraVax? COVID-19 vaccine, Biological E's CorbiVax, gets EUA, emergency use authorization, for use in 12 to 18-year-olds in India. February 22, 2022, the Drugs Controller General of India had already approved Biological E's CorbiVax for restricted use in emergency situation among adults on December 28, 2019. This was before COVID was even being talked about. What does India's Biological E manufacture? Snake antivenom, and included in the list are cobra and crate. Dr. Ardis wants CorbiVax tested for cobra peptides or proteins. He asks, are they injecting 12 to 18-year-olds and adults with snake venom? July 2021, Moderna co-founder is using mRNA technology to treat venomous snake bites. I covered this actually in the first show on Wednesday. When you see that everything is related to snake venom, everything related to COVID becomes very clear. How to treat it and how to handle it. And Mike Adams says, so COVID vaccines are snake venom with instructions to your body to make more snake venom, and you're even saying that SARS-CoV-2 itself is derived from snake venom. We're looking at Moderna's co-founder, this is Dr. Ardis, and the only drug they've ever made is the COVID-19 vaccine. In July 2021, he says we can use mRNA technology to treat venomous snake bites. Have you heard of Dr. Hoffe in British Columbia, Canada? He reported that after getting COVID-19 vaccine, his patients were getting long COVID fatigue. He decided to do a test on all of them, the D-dimer test. What are doctors trained to look for if they see elevated D-dimers? How are high-level D-dimers interpreted? March 2022 on Medscape.com. Snake venom poisoning is one of the causes of elevated D-dimer levels. Dr. Ardis is absolutely certain that there are snake venom peptides being used as the mRNA injections, and they are reacting with coagulation throughout the body. Venoms from snakes have this massive ability to create micro blood clots throughout the body. What is being seen by doctors is a reaction to cobra venom. Ryan Cole has talked about it. He sees micro blood clotting throughout the body. And I commented on this, but he said earlier that cobra venom is an anticoagulant and it is crate venom that causes blood clotting. So I'm questioning if this is inconsistent. Mike Adams comments, it's responsible for organ damage. It's on the surface of organs. Everyone should go online and search for these terms, because the internet is going to get scrubbed from anything that says snake venom, vaccines, anti-venom, everything. Dr. Ardis continues. He's got multiple documents saved on hard drives and printed. Now everyone around the world will know what to treat these people for. Anyone who has had a COVID-19 vaccine and is suffering from side effects needs to get a D-dimer test. If you have elevated D-dimers, one of the things you're looking for is snake venom poisoning. And Mike Adams says, if someone has had the COVID-19 vaccine, essentially they are producing snake venom molecules that are circulating in the blood, and they're going to show up on the surface of their skin. They're going to shed snake venom. We're talking about humans being turned into serpents. And that reminded me of a British horror movie that I watched as a child, well, probably a teenager. It was made in 1961 called The Snake Woman, about a woman injected with snake venom by her husband to cure her, in quote, sick mind. She later gives birth to a daughter the villagers begin to call the devil's baby. And then there's this investigation in the village because many people are dying from snake bites. Dr. Ardis, have you heard about people shedding their skin after getting these shots? I have. Jeff Jackson, you wonder why you're shedding your skin on the Stu Peters show. It's like a snake. Mike Adams, if Satan were to try the ultimate prank on God's creation, he would try to turn you from human into a serpent. And that's what this is doing. And then you run around shedding venom onto other people. He knows people who get headaches around vaccinated people, or they get nauseated around vaxxed people, and there are women who have infertility or strange menstruation effects when they've been around vaxxed, shedding people. Suddenly this all makes sense. You can't have a baby or a regular period if your body is infested with venom. Dr. Ardis, can you imagine the gravity of this information and the impact on the pharmaceutical companies when the world finds out? They are about to approve injections for children, 6 months to 4-year-olds. They're already injecting 5 to 11-year-olds. What will the parents think? Who would want their children to ever get bitten by a viper? None. Also, the elderly. The peptides in venom target comorbidities and inflamed organs. They are targeting diabetics, heart failure patients, and kidney failure patients. So that's the end of part two, which is, again, bringing together all this information relating snake venom and the symptoms of snake venom poisoning to the experiences of people who have had COVID and who have had the vaccine, so-called vaccine. So, as I said earlier, there is a lot of circumstantial evidence here that I don't think should be discounted. And I think what we really need to see is some proof of what is in these vaccines, because we've seen quite a number of people examining the vaccines under the microscope, which is showing, you know, graphene oxide and weird parasite looking things in there. But I don't think I haven't seen an actual chemical analysis of the contents of the vaccine. And even though this woman that I referred to earlier was claiming that COVID doesn't exist, you know, we have had people suffering from quite severe illnesses. And yes, it could be linked to 5G as well, because we know that the dynabeads that were mentioned earlier and also in part one are magnetic, and 5G can actually affect the body through these magnetic dynabeads. I don't have all the technical bit relating to it, but also, yes, 5G does cause respiratory issues because apparently it sucks oxygen out of the air. So I do think this is worthy of more investigation. I tend to take a very kind of neutral view about this. I like to report the details that are being shared, and I'm hoping that somebody will take this a step further and actually be able to check for venom poisoning in people, and also the existence of the venom peptides and proteins in the mRNA of the COVID-19 vaccines. So I do have a few minutes left. I can just cover a couple of other hot topics. Epoch Times reports, and this is just out, former Clinton campaign lawyer made false statements to second government agency, and this is from Durham. Former Hillary Clinton campaign lawyer Michael Sussman, who is accused of lying to the FBI when he claimed he was not handing over information about then-candidate Donald Trump in 2016, made false statements to CIA officers in a meeting after Trump was sworn into office, according to new filings by special counsel John Durham's team. Sussman told James Baker at the time, the FBI's general counsel, that he had time-sensitive and sensitive information to share before the pair met, according to a text message recently disclosed by prosecutors. In the same message, Sussman claimed he was coming on my own, not on behalf of a client or company, even though he'd been directed to deliver the information by Rodney Joffe, a technology executive, and build the Clinton campaign for the work, according to prosecutors. Sussman provided Baker in a September 19, 2016 meeting with white papers that alleged Trump's business had a secret channel with a Russian bank, allegations the FBI later determined were untrue. On February 9, 2017, Sussman met with CIA officers, where he also made false statements, according to the new filings. A memorandum introduced by the special counsel's team and penned by a CIA official said that Sussman provided documents and thumb drives that he claimed contained data related to potential Russian activities linked with Trump. Sussman advised that he was not representing a particular client, according to the notes. Instead, he was conveying information from contacts, he said, who he believed were acting in good faith and out of a sense of loyalty to the US government. That contradicts how Sussman told a former CIA employee, who was said to have helped set up the February meeting, that he represents a client who does not want to be known, according to notes of the meeting taken by the former employee. It also contradicts testimony Sussman delivered to the House Intelligence Committee. Under oath, Sussman said he received the information from a client of mine. Sussman said he learned of the information by the summer of 2016, but only came forward months later because President Barack Obama ordered an intelligence review of possible Russian interference in elections. This information seemed to fall roughly within that, and so I thought that might be, or my client thought that that might be, something that was relevant for those that were gathering information regarding foreign-based actors, Sussman said. Another apparently false statement relates to what Sussman said during the meeting with the CIA concerning his previous meeting with the FBI. Sussman gave the same information regarding the alleged secret channel to the CIA that he had to Baker. Sussman told the officers he had previously contacted Baker, but on a similar, though unrelated, matter, according to the memo. In front of the congressional panel, Sussman said he had already passed on the information to the FBI before he met with the CIA. In context, the defendant's statement that he had provided the FBI with similar, though unrelated, allegations is false or at best misleading, Durham's team said in one of the new filings. Further, the CIA later concluded both the claim about the secret channel and a separate allegation which was brought to the CIA and not the FBI concerning Russian-made phones was technically plausible, did not withstand technical scrutiny, contained gaps, and conflicted with itself, and was user-created and not machine-tool-generated, according to the special counsel's office. Sussman's lawyers, in a separate filing, said their client's statement to the CIA cannot possibly be part of the charged offence concerning a single different statement, and it was not made contemporaneously with the charged crime, adding, in fact, it was made 5 months later in different circumstances to a different agency in a way that conflicts with the special counsel's theory that Mr. Sussman lied to Mr. Baker to help Hillary Clinton win the election because the election was long since over. The lawyers are not objecting to the admission of one of the statements Sussman made to the House panel concerning the CIA meeting, but are objecting to the introduction of any evidence concerning the accuracy of the data he provided to the CIA. They also reserve the right to introduce evidence rebutting the special counsel's claims, including evidence that will demonstrate that Mr. Sussman disclosed to CIA personnel that he had a client and that he had worked with political clients. According to the CIA memo, Sussman did mention that his law firm was involved with Democrats, including Clinton, but also said that that work was unrelated to his reasons for contacting the CIA. Sussman's trial is slated to start on May 16th at federal court in Washington. I'm just going to quickly mention another big news item, and that is Elon Musk's attempt to buy out Twitter. Musk, who has a 9.2% stake in Twitter, made headlines on Thursday by launching a bid to buy all of Twitter's outstanding shares in cash at a significant premium over market price. He said he was offering to buy 100% of Twitter for $54.20 per share in cash, a 54% premium over the day before I began investing in Twitter, and a 38% premium over the day before my investment was publicly announced. My offer is my best and final offer, and if it is not accepted, I would need to reconsider my position as a shareholder, he added. And this was from Epoch Times again. Musk responds to reports Twitter mulling poison pill tactic to foil his takeover bid. Twitter is reportedly considering a so-called poison pill tactic to thwart Elon Musk's effort to buy out the social media platform, prompting a critical response from the Tesla chief. The poison pill method gives existing shareholders the right to buy additional shares at a discount, diluting outstanding stock and making a hostile takeover more financially challenging for the acquirer. Musk said a poison pill move could expose Twitter's board to titanic legal liability. And Twitter's board have actually rejected Elon Musk's offer. And apparently he's looking at perhaps doing another bid with co-financiers. We'll have to see how this plays out. But the Twitterverse is going crazy in terms of the Liberals' response to this and Twitter employees' response to this. Their heads are exploding because they don't want free speech on the platform. They want it to be a controlled Liberal, Democrat, leftist dialogue. So quite interesting to see this play out. We'll have to see what happens from now on. So that's all I have time for this week. I hope you've enjoyed the show. My plan is to continue reporting on this snake venom claim from Dr. Ardis by covering the third part of the Mike Adams interview. And that'll be Wednesday, of course. So I hope you'll join me then. Thank you very much for listening. I'd like to thank Nancy for producing and also Derek Condit of mysticalwares.com for sponsoring Cosmic Reality Radio and making all of this possible. So be well, stay safe, and bye for now.
You have been listening to Cosmic Creating with Jan Shaw, updating current reality, a production of CosmicReality.com.
Thank you for listening to Cosmic Reality Radio. We appreciate your support. Please visit our sponsor at MysticalWares.com for our huge selection of metaphysical products, gifts, candles, incense, and one of the largest shungite collections available.
Cosmic Reality Radio is sponsored by Mystical Wares online store, where coupon code SAVE10 will get you 10% off your entire order at MysticalWares.com.